Keith Dahmer.
Here.
Angel Ozabalam.
Here.
Anna Rosenberry.
Here.
And Bill Davis.
Here.
All right, we have a quorum.
Thank you. That's agenda item A. Let's move on to agenda item B, the consent agenda, approval of the regular meeting minutes from November 24th, 2025. I would love to entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
I'll move to approve the minutes.
Was that Anna?
I'll second.
Yep.
And Bill Davis seconded?
Yep.
So we have a motion to approve the regular meeting minutes from November 24th, 2025. Is there any discussion? I'm not hearing any discussion. In that event, I would love to take a vote on the motion. All in favor of approving the regular meeting minutes from November 24, 2025, please say aye.
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 Actually, Keith, I'm sorry to interrupt. Because it's a virtual meeting, it has to be a roll call vote.
Ah, cool. Okay. I looked at the minutes last time, and this is the way we did it, so I apologize for doing it incorrectly last time and trying to do it wrong again this time. Don, can you do the roll call vote then?
I'll go ahead and do it. Okay. Keith Dahmer?
Aye, yes.
Angel Zimalam?
Aye.
Anna Rosenberry?
Aye.
And Bill Davis?
Aye.
All approved.
Hearing the roll call vote, motion I'm passes. Going to declare that the motion passed unanimously, 4-0. And that ends agenda item B. Bringing us to agenda item C, the PARS client review. As of December 31st, 2025, PARS, if you'd love to take it away, we'd appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Angela, can you go ahead? Perfect. We're on the same page. Well, thank you very much, everybody in attendance, for allowing us to present. Can we go to slide 2, please? So I'll introduce the team, but I'll introduce myself for the folks who I haven't met yet. My name is Carter Kimberly. I am a senior consultant with PARS. On the call as well, we have a couple other PARS members. We have Eric O'Leary, we have Angela Tang, and also Charlie Francis, if there's any other questions that need to be answered on the PARS standpoint as well. So here we have the PARS trust team. And PARS serves as a trust administrator and consultant for the pioneer of Section 115 trusts. We serve as a record keeper. We process distributions and contributions and also compliance for the trust. U.S. Bank serves as your independent trustee, and they safeguard the plan assets for the retirees in the plan. Next slide, please.
Carter, I had a quick question. I'm sorry. Can I interrupt?
Yep. Of course.
I believe I was looking at the investment policy, getting ready for what's going to be next meeting now, and it discussed the term it used is custodian for the investments. That would be U.S. Bank. Is that correct?
Yes. So U.S. Bank serves as a custodian. That is correct.
I just wanted to make sure. Thank you. I assume that was correct, but I wanted to make sure. So thank you very much.
Of course. Appreciate the clarity. Next slide, and I'll actually hand it over to Angela to go over a summary of the trust account.
Great. Thank you, Carter. So on page 3, this is a summary of the city's trust, which was put into place back in January of 2021. The plan administrator is for the position of the treasury and pension administrator, and the current investment strategy is a custom portfolio managed by PFM Asset Management. The second half of this page does give us information on the account as of the close of the fourth quarter for 2025. But up top, as you can see, as a reminder, the first contribution that we received was back in March of 2021 in the amount of $645 million. Since then, we have received additional contributions totaling at just over $901 million as of December 31st. The city has also taken out some money out from the trust, so you can see that the total for that comes out to be $380.4 million or so. Expenses comes out to be 2.8, and then accounting for the total investments earning thus far at $194.9 million, this does put the account at $712.7 million as of December 31st. The next page is a graphical representation showing you over time what the movement of assets have looked like for the city's account. And this is broken out for us with by fiscal year ending June. So you can see those additional contributions that have come in over time, the withdrawals that the city has made or disbursements over time as well. And then on the far right column, this gives you a look at the movement of assets over fiscal year over time. And again, at the very bottom, you'll see that $712.7 million that's in the account as of December 31st there. With that being said, I'll go ahead and pass it back to Carter to review the funding status here.
Thank you. So here's a live look, and I apologize for the as-of date in the top right that reads June 30, 2024. This is actually 2025's data, so it was an oversight on my behalf, so I apologize for that. But this is a June 30, 2025, and this slide summarizes the city's PSPRS funded status of that time, and the primary challenge continues to be that Tier 1 and Tier 2 plan. The police and fire in total have about a $2 billion pension liability, and approximately 1.24 of that is an unfunded liability, which altogether sets the plan at about 37 to 39% funded when you add up all of the numbers. The good news is that the Tier 3 side of the equation is much stronger, and you can see that the pension reform along that time is reflecting nicely. From a budgeting perspective, the city's total required annual contribution is about $119 million annually. However, in addition to the pension system's assets, when you set aside the $713 million in a Section 115 trust, this sets the PSPRS assets, when you add in the $713 million along with the PSPRS assets, the city's effective funded status is around 73.7% if you add the numbers together. However, that's not actuarially based information. That is just for the sake of this conversation. When you add the two numbers, that leaves the unfunded liability roughly at about $527 million. Overall, this is generally consistent with the presentation that we've had from the last meeting, but we'll continue to monitor this page as well with the trust and provide those accurate annual reporting updates as they change. Are there any questions as it relates to any of these numbers on this page or any of the overarching themes that we've kind of talked about over the past couple meetings? Hearing none, I will go to the next slide and hand it back over to Angela.
Great. Page 6, we've provided here a overall overview of what those asset movements have looked like over time, and we've given it a little bit more detailed outlook here on this page. So it is broken out for us again by fiscal year ending, so you can see what those time periods are up top here. And then on the side, we've broken out the information that we shared previously, again, just pertaining to each of those fiscal years. So you can see again for this current fiscal year, that's accounting for that 6 months of activity, we are looking at that $712.7 million just in the account thus far. And then jumping to the last page here, Carter gave a quick overview of the team that works on behalf of the trust or works on the trust on behalf of the city, but our contact information is just included here should you ever need to reach out to us.
Angela, this is Keith. Can we jump back one slide and can I ask a quick question?
Of course.
Thank you very much. A couple things jumped out at me when I was reviewing this slide. One of them is I love seeing the investment returns doing so well. Second thing, in the contributions column for 6/30/2026, which is half of the fiscal year, that number looks smaller than half of what it's supposed to be. Is there, are we capturing all 6 months of activity in that number that you're aware of?
Yes, to my knowledge, this information is through December 31st. From my confirmation, that is through December 31st there.
All right.
And I'll just go ahead and maybe add, based on our previous meeting, was that the contributions from the city were going to be less for this year. And there was going to be more distributions out of the trust, which would offset the smaller amount of contributions based on my notes from the last meeting. That is why this number is smaller.
Great. So that was planned and is the correct six-month number?
Yes.
To your knowledge. Great. Okay. Yes. Got it. I'll have to go back through my notes and look at that again. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. Angela, was that it then?
So unless there's any other questions from the group here, that would be the end of our update for this quarter.
Any other questions for... Was I hearing someone wanting to ask a question?
I'm sorry, Keith. No, it's Bill Davis. I have no questions.
Ah, cool. All right. Thank you very much, Paris. We appreciate the information. It's wonderful having it, and you did a great job. Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of agenda item DC. And we would love to move on to agenda item D, which is the investment performance review, PFM asset management. If you'd love to take us through your investment performance review as of 12/31/25, we'd appreciate that also.
Yeah. So thank you again for giving us the time to discuss here. We've got a document. I don't mean to laugh. Document's fine. Just as is often unfortunately the case, market events recently are going to influence a lot of what we have in print here as of year end. So I'd first like to touch just a bit on where we were year end. I've actually got the portfolio up on the screen, on my second screen. So if it appears that I'm looking up, it's just because I'm looking literally at the data on a second screen. We'll give some thoughts on both the Supreme Court's ruling on IEEPA, which affects all the tariffs, as well as what is going on in the Middle East as we speak. And the market has now closed, so I'm hoping it will at least be static from the time I start talking till when I finish in hopefully less than 15 or 20 minutes. So let's start with the market review, and I'm not sure who's sharing that or can share the screen. If we can put that slide up. If not, I might be able to share it myself here. You know what? Why don't I do that?
Yeah, I think it would be best if you drove the PowerPoint.
Then I can control the page turns then,
mm-hmm.
At least in theory. So, all right. Hopefully everyone can see the first page of the presentation deck. Yes, good. Okay, I've shared the right screen. always a curveball for all of us who do this. I'm going to start with our overview on the economy, and a number of things have changed since this went into print. We have been working on getting an updated version of it out, but unfortunately our time from when we finished to getting things out the door is about 48 hours to get things through our legal and compliance area, and the world is changing quicker than that 48 hours. So what we came out with when we sent this out to you about a week ago, still our year end, and I can update a couple of the numbers. So GDP is that first slide. Third quarter and fourth quarter are looking good. The economy has slowed, we would say considerably since then. We're around 4% come year end. Right now, the run rate off the most recent statistics is more about 2.6%. And, you know, we'll get into interest rates and what that means, but typically in a slowing economy, you're going to look for the Fed to be cutting rates. Combined with the second bullet point, which is around unemployment, while it did tick up in November here, it's running now at about 4.4%. Our expectation is that it will go a bit higher, by year end, 4.5, maybe 4.6. The continuation of the low higher, low fire, scenario, we're now extending out, you know, probably at least to the end of the year. I think there was a lot of thought, and certainly we spent a lot of time talking about it, as tariffs were rolled out by the administration, and different policy changes were happening, corporations were holding back a bit on expanding and hiring, waiting for things to calm down a bit and for there to be some certainty. And unfortunately, given moving parts and specifically commodity prices, you know, that corporate America leaning in and starting to hire more is probably on hold for at least a few more months, pending other changes. It was also interesting, healthcare really took probably the biggest hit in terms of job losses in the most recent print. That's relatively new, and is something we'll be digging into more. So employment not strong. Again, this would lean towards an expectation for the Fed to cut. Countering that is inflation. The inflation numbers continue to be sticky. The Fed, by definition, is supposed to target 2%. We've been 2.6 to 2.9, maybe, and right now we're looking at 3% inflation. And that's the Fed's second mandate, right? They are there to help employment, but also to control inflation. There's a lot of pieces under the hood there. As we've said in the past, and we continue to see, one of the sub statistics in here is PCE. That is, what really participants and consumer expenditures are, and inflation numbers there are even higher. Food, certainly within last week or over the weekend, gasoline, right? Energy prices, things that are more visible, are actually at higher inflation rates. And so the consumer's perception of inflation, is probably out ahead of where it actually is. When inflation is high, the Fed's tool is to keep interest rates high and not to cut rates. And so they're in a sticky spot right now. There's a lot of back and forth on, where, they will be. If I look at, statistically just for, percentages, we came into the year, with the most likely scenario being 3 Fed cuts during 2026. As we're pricing today, you basically have to get to the end of July before there's a 50-50 chance of even 1 Fed rate cut. And the market is only right now is pricing about a 17% chance of 2 rate cuts by the end of the year. We just, PFM, as part of U.S. Bank, published our economic outlook. Our expectation on mortgage rates, currently on average, about 6.23. We expect that to be down to maybe 6.05 by the end of the year. So, that is not necessarily good news in the housing industry. We're going to hear more, about this, as we roll through the year. A lot of moving parts. I just touched on the Fed Reserve and potential rate cuts. Consumer sentiment is something we've spoken about for years. And in all honesty, the volatility month to month within these surveys is making them less and less reliable in terms of being indicators of where spending may go. It's really bounced around pretty considerably. There's a lot of focus on inflation, as you might expect. And You know, the job market is going to be a big driver of that as well. Where historically we have tied that consumer sentiment number is it tends to roll pretty directly into retail spending, despite, you know, some really ugly lows in consumer sentiment, followed by the next month of things being above average and then bouncing down again. Consumer spending continues to be really quite strong. There is some concern in terms of, you know, where consumers are, the lower income brackets. There certainly has been some slowing. It's probably tied to the job market being a bit tighter than we all would like it to be. But sentiment's something that we'll continue to report on, but boy, it just has not been a particularly good indicator, going forward. And on, you know, the published report we put out, we were talking about Venezuela. Not nearly as many questions in the last 10 days about Venezuela, given the situation we've got going in Iran. But that is a situation that needs to continue to be watched and could create more noise by the end of the year. I will not spend much time on, kind of reviewing actual returns in the markets. It's printed here and you certainly can read it. We've got a table with all the statistics in it above. I will point out, earnings, facts and earnings, as of December, earnings have continued to come in very strong. The expectation in the market is better than 12% earnings growth, in 2026. And to the extent that, companies are able to deliver on those earnings growth numbers, we think that the market is fairly valued, maybe a little pricey. But you may hear, and in fact, we even put it in here, right? The S&P 500 at 27.5 times earnings at the end of the year versus a historical norm of 23. Boy, that might make people feel like, is the stock market pricey right now? If those earnings come through, you know, that PE ratio is probably closer to 24.5. So really not that much above average. What's going to affect those earnings? We'll circle back to the earlier statistics, right? What are underlying, inflation costs? If you know, the cost of your inputs, particularly the cost of energy is going to have an influence on that. And certainly the cost of labor, which should not be, you know, given where the unemployment rate is, should not be a large pressure point, but it'll be something to watch. In the international space, I would point out again, international markets had very good years. We continue to believe in diversification and using those in the portfolios. You've got an allocation there, which has done well. Value has outperformed growth, which is relatively new. And we expect to see continued returns on the value side relative to growth. Again, this is just a cyclical rotation. Growth has outperformed for so long that those putting money, institutions in particular, putting money to work are looking more in the value space. Because of valuations on growth stocks being so high. Finally, in the bond market, well, there's a lot of moving parts here. Up until about a week ago, we were being cautious, but expected, rates to continue to drift down throughout the year. Inflation being a potential issue, and the U.S. deficit continue to be an issue. Now has us and you know, many people in the industry rethinking that strategy. You know, if the Fed does not cut rates until second half of the year, maybe once, maybe twice, rates should stay higher longer. For those of us who are investors in fixed income, this is good news, right? It's higher nominal returns. It's a good thing. For those hoping lower interest rates are going to help certain sectors of the economy, certainly the automotive sector, anything in housing, you know, the lack of rate cuts, isn't going to help. Now I want to be careful. I feel like as I've gone through all of this, I'm sounding a bit negative. The reality is, you know, there's just a lot of volatility in the market right now. I'm going to touch on the Iran situation, and how we view it here in the moment. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, a 4.5% unemployment rate historically is actually decent. GDP in the mid twos, it would be okay, right? Not great, not as high as many would like, But it's not like it's an economic contraction. You'll see in our summary, yeah, equity prices are a bit high, but growth looks strong. And we continue to believe in equity market returns. We do have a slight tilt in small cap relative to large cap, which we've discussed a lot with the Iranian situation. There might be a short-term shift back away from that, but that move has helped certainly over the last 9 months, and we expect small cap and international to continue to outperform. So we're not making changes to the portfolio, but certainly these are questions we're getting from clients. Slide 1.8, which I've got up here, is our dots, right? Well, where are we on a number of these factors? On the left side, we remain very optimistic. Monetary policy, again, we're not going to be getting two Fed rate cuts probably in 26. If we do, the second will be right near the end. But we continue to feel like there's ample liquidity there. Financial conditions, corporate balance sheets are in great shape. We are quite optimistic. The concerns are inflation, labor market, and boy, the political policy risk probably now goes into the negative/red box. We're in part of the market cycle where these things are going to happen. I think on the political risk, the question is also just how many situations are we going to be dealing with? While Venezuela is out of the news, it won't be, throughout the end of the year. They've got a long ways to go to get that economy back to any sense of normalcy. And how far and wide the Iranian situation goes is certainly clearly up in the air. I'm going to circle back to that in a moment. Overall, valuations are a bit high, but consumer spending remains okay. Economic growth remains okay. We are actually right where we were last quarter. If we printed this chart this morning, other than maybe that the political risk going to negative, the chart would remain the same. We're going to keep our eyes on consumer spending because that's the one that probably in the short run has the most potential risk in it. One last thing worth noting, and I know we've talked about this before, private debt. There have been, for those who follow financial headlines closely, there have been a couple of instances now, and there certainly is concern on Wall Street around pricing and liquidity in private debt funds. For the record, the portfolio we manage does not have any allocations to this. I know the other portfolio does. That's strategically the reason why. But it's just something worth watching. The headline it started back in January. BlackRock has a semi-liquid fund, which that word always gives me angst. I'm not a lawyer, but semi, is it liquid or not liquid, right? Large investor demands for money to flow out, and they moved the pricing from roughly 100 cents on the dollar, I believe, is down to about 84. A 16% decrease in value on a bond fund in a single day certainly sent some angst through the market. Another relatively big firm, Blue Owl, now is dealing with some of the same issues, and this has spread to just a broad, boy, these assets are not marked to market very often. What truly is the value? Where are we going? I would also back that up with, when you look high level industry-wise at some of the statistics, these firms go out and raise money and then go out and find deals to put the money into. They're currently sitting on roughly 3 years worth of cash based on kind of their annual investment rate. So there's a lot of money on the sidelines, and I want to be careful that I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but historically, when there's too much money chasing a smaller or not big enough amount of deals, the approach to risk and underwriting tends to deteriorate over time. Historically, that is what has happened. So that is, I think, right now where the market's concern is coming from. Has too much money chased into this asset class? Have some of these firms invested in maybe not great underlying deals? And where will that disruption potentially go? We believe it'll be in the headlines. We believe also 12 to maybe 24 months out, there'll be some opportunities to buy some assets cheaply. I'm not sure that that will apply to or may never apply to this particular portfolio, but it is something we're watching on. Happy to have, you know, any future conversations you'd like on that subject. All right, let me finish then with a few comments on the Middle East and specifically around Iran. So I don't know that we have a conclusion yet. We should have a written outlook piece done sometime by the end of this week. More to come. Happy to send that out to whoever would like it. And if you don't want these things, let us know. We don't want to be filling your email boxes with them. You know, I think probably the biggest concern the markets are having right now coming around a couple points. If you look since the end of World War II, 10 recessions that have happened, 9 of them have had significant spikes in oil prices that preceded the recession. That certainly is concerning. And for those who, and I'm assuming everyone does, drives by a gas pump, you know, gas prices are up 50 to 55 cents on average. There's a huge regional difference, though. In the Pacific Northwest, they're probably only up 3 or 4%. In the Southeast, in Texas, they're up close to 20%. They started from a slightly lower base, but still, there are definitely some regional differences in it. Diesel, on average, is up 80 cents. That's going to affect, obviously, transportation costs, which is going to be a feeder into the inflation piece. Jet fuel is up about $1.50 a gallon. So these are significant increases in costs that companies are going to have to deal with. And if you want to be really kind of downtrodden and depressed, liquid natural gas, which is not something consumers interact with often, but is a big piece in industrial manufacturing globally and certainly in the U.S., that liquid natural gas prices are up 80%, almost 85%. In the last week and a half. So energy costs are scary right now. Let me be clear. That being said, our own economics group just put out a piece about 10 minutes before this meeting started, basically stating we don't expect there to be a recession. In fact, and it'll be the headline in the piece. I know sometimes they like to push certain things to the top, but even with gas at $120 a barrel, their expectation is that would not, for an extended period of time, I think 4 or 5 months, that would not push the U.S. economy into recession. Certainly people would feel it. However, there's a couple of things to keep in mind. First off, it has really changed, certainly in my lifetime. But the U.S. is actually a net exporter of energy. We have, you know, especially at these higher gasoline prices, an ability to pump quite a bit of crude, and our economy will not be as affected as others by prices. Short term, will there be a pinch? Yes. But if we get into multiple months of issues, there certainly is the ability for U.S. oil producers to really increase flow here. And we're pretty optimistic about that industry's ability to turn it on. I have relatives who live in North Dakota, and I was just there this fall. You drive through North Dakota, they had a boom in oil fracking a number of years ago. The number of oil rigs you see not pumping was an amazing number. It is not difficult to get those back online. That could happen if prices stay high longer. Also remember, the U.S. has the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which normally historically, they have tapped into when prices get above $100 a barrel. We've not heard anything from the administration yet that that will be the case. But that is another option that's there. And a lot of this is coming around the Strait of Hormuz. In fact, in the last 20 minutes of the market, apparently someone in the administration, it might have been Trump, I don't want to be exactly quoted because I know I'm being recorded here, but said that Strait of Hormuz, if need be, the U.S. will take control of it, and oil moved from $100 down to like $88 a barrel by the end of the day. It was $120 sometime last night. So there's a lot of noise in the short term here. There are solutions right for that. And again, I don't want to pretend that you know, consumers aren't going to feel this. They are. You know, it's the amount of gas that people are using is really not something that can be adjusted significantly in the short term. People drive to work. People drive to pick their kids up. These are things that are planned. They're going to happen. And so that money comes out of discretionary spending. And if it was a longer term bump, you know, that all those discretionary industries, vacations, restaurants, all of those things could get dinged. It's a bit early to go that far. So it's just a situation we're going to have to watch closely. Certainly, as there should be, there's going to be a lot of attention on the situation and concern about how it gets resolved. The big thing from a purely economic standpoint, and I should have started with this, all of my comments around how much money the markets make on this, I do that because that's functionally my job. That's why you've hired us to do that part of it. It doesn't mean there are many other things we should be concerned with. But through the lens of purely economics, probably the single biggest issue is the Strait of Hormuz, the amount of shipping that's able to be done through that, and the length of time where there are delays. I believe the most recent update we got this morning was maybe 5 or 6 oil tankers got through in the last 24 hours, and there are several hundred sitting, waiting, looking for some instructions on what to do. So hopefully we get some resolution to that. That would help on the oil price side, which will help on the economic shock side. Let me stop there. That's a whole lot in a short period of time, and see if there are questions, comments, concerns, opinions. I'm sure there are opinions, but. All right. Hearing none, let me just then quickly touch on the plan portfolio performance. As Keith mentioned earlier, it's really nice to show those big investment return numbers. Here they are. The last 3 years, the portfolio returned a little better than 15%. Those are phenomenal returns. To be clear, that is the market. We added a little bit, of help there from a U.S. bank standpoint. But when equity markets do well, this portfolio is going to do well. Our expectation, even independent of the last 10 days, is those numbers over the next 3 years should be high single digits. They won't be 14, 15, 16%. It's just not possible given all the moving parts. We're not bears. We are not pulling money out of equities. We're not concerned about the economy in many ways, but we're just trying to manage expectations that we need to go through a period where returns are more normalized. In our year-end outlook, which now may be adjusted, we expected fixed income returns to come down as well, right? As rates come down, right? If bonds are issued at 4%, you're not going to get 5% returns on them without rates coming down further. Now our view has shifted to our expectation, and I think the street's expectation is rates will largely be flat, maybe slightly lower. And so fixed income may do a bit better, especially over issuance here. For duration sensitive clients, which pension plans are, right? Our recommendations is there's an opportunity here for investors to invest longer term. To the extent the committee or others would like to, we could certainly have that conversation. That might mean a tweak in the investment policy. Not sure we want to go that far, but we do feel over the next 5 to 7 years, rates will be lower. So the ability to lock in rates at slightly higher yields here in 2026, to the extent you can, there may be an opportunity, and we can take that offline. And cash returns, which are right in line with fixed income returns, you know, again, they're very sensitive to short-term rates. Within the inflation numbers where they're at, our expectations, we won't see those returns coming down significantly either. So slightly better returns on the fixed income side should help. Last slide for me to touch on is just we put out the net flow numbers. Again, these are as of year end, and PAR's team is doing them as a fiscal year end. We talked about it actually in the last meeting. We're going to adjust the reporting here so that our reports line up the same time frame. But as of the end of the year, the portfolio value is $712 million. And actually, as of close today, you're at about $709 million. Equities year to date are a bit off. But we will get that in sync. I think it'll be a little more intuitive then as we go through the meetings. All right. Questions on the portfolio review, our returns, economic outlook, any broad investment topics?
Jeff, this is Keith.
Yeah.
We had an agenda item today scheduled to review the investment policy. I believe we're tabling that and moving that till the next meeting. But okay. One of the elements of our investment policy is that quarterly the advisor reports to the committee on our investment performance. You guys are doing great on that. There's another element in there that annually the advisor shall report to the committee the appropriateness of this policy statement for our trust fund's objectives. I'm not sure where we are in that annual report. That's one of the reasons why that agenda item's coming up, and I'm looking forward to it at the next meeting. But I think I typically ask at this meetings are you seeing anything in our policy, in our asset allocation, and in what's happening in the market and the economy that's leading us to wanting to change or tweak this? Or is this policy still continuing to seem appropriate for the plan's goals and objectives?
The short answer is the policy is still consistent with, I don't expect we'll make any significant recommendations on changing it. As I mentioned, with a few moving parts, given our expectation that equity returns over the next 5 years will be a bit lower than historical norms, that's just based on valuation where we're at, and that fixed income returns will remain a bit lower, if there's any tweak at all, it may be a question about, you know, do you want to extend duration to get you slightly higher returns? And to the extent those pension liabilities, you know, are a function of where long-term interest rates are, it can help remove some of that risk, but it's all going to be, you know, very much on the margin. So I don't see that there'll be any significant changes.
Overall, the investment policy is working to achieve our goals and objectives then.
Yeah. Cool. And for what it's worth, I've got my book of business, including this guy, I've got 30 clients, and it is about 60% pension plans. And the rest of my book is college endowments. While they don't have the actuarial number, they've got the same, you know, they need to generate income for the schools every year. So every client I have works on this. And, I'm not just saying it to be nice, given I've got a wide range of policies, and I got clients who should be where you guys are at. So I don't expect we're going to see any changes. But, you know, more to come. We'll do the analytics and walk the committee through it next quarter.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Oops, sorry, I was muted. Any other questions for PFM on the investment performance review and agenda item D? Thank you. We could move on to agenda item E, except we're not quite ready for that. We're going to table that until the next meeting. And then that brings us to agenda item F, a call to the audience. At this time, the community may address the board with their concerns. The board may not address the specific concern at this meeting. However, the board may, at its discretion, make a future agenda item, at which time there can be a discussion. Community members are asked to address the board, not specific members. Each person is limited to 3 minutes. Are there any members of the community that would like to address the board at this time? I am not hearing any audience members that would like to address the board, so I'm going to call agenda item F closed. Agenda item G, future agenda items. Is there anyone that would like to propose any future agenda items for us?
Not here.
Yes, go ahead, Bill.
Not here, Keith. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I did have two agenda items. One was the review So we know we're going to have a review of the investment policy coming up next time. I also had two additional agenda items. I think we are reviewing our 115 trust board policies and procedures. I think that's been in a standing item that's been worked on since shortly after this trust board was established. We do have a guiding document that oversees us that was passed as part of the initial debt that was issued to set up this trust, but there are some holes and gaps in that a little bit that would make running this board a little more efficient if we could resolve some of those. So I'm hoping maybe doesn't have to be at the next meeting, but I'm hoping sometime coming up soon we are going to revisit those trust board policies and procedures and see if we can get those approved, both that address specifically what the responsibilities of the trustees and the trust board is and what the roles and responsibilities of the plan administrator are in administering the process of this. Second one that was on my list that I made obvious earlier because I didn't realize that half of the year's contributions were perfectly normal because the city was going to be giving the trust less money this year. Part of that wasn't obvious to me because I haven't seen a financial plan for the trust specifically for a while, and so I'm hoping that we can work on seeing a financial plan getting developed that we've seen several over the years. I'm not sure what the current one is, and I would love to see that fairly regularly being presented going forward. Any other items? I see Lisa Lopez's hand raised.
I just have a couple of items to bring up. One of them is the openings that are on the board, and how we want to try to fill those openings. And Keith, I know that
I'm not going to go back to you.
You've been on the board for about 5 years, is it now, since inception? So, Jason, sorry, your speaker's on. If you want to mute. Okay, there he goes. All right. So, I don't know if you want to put that on as a future discussion about, I think the manager's office is the one who's supposed to propose or look for those board members according to our documents, the memo.
I think we're currently missing a board member right now. And yes, the draft policies and procedures for our board have 4-year terms built into them. We haven't approved those. So I was just taking the opportunity to say I fulfilled my 4-year board and term and wasn't planning on renewing my service. I've completed 8 years on another board and 8 years on another board before that and 4 years on another board. I'm kind of getting ready to be done. But so then that would leave us with two openings. I don't know the county administrator's, I'm sorry, the city manager's plan for fulfilling those roles. I think it's best if all of us as a group use all of our resources to try to identify people that would be grateful fulfilling these roles. And I certainly will keep that in mind and see what I can do in the next few months to come up with a recommendation.
Anna does have her hand up, I think. Or she did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an appropriate conversation for the folks that are responsible with filling the board seats. And so that needs to be a conversation with the city manager, my chain of command, yes, and any council members that might need to be involved.
Okay. And also there was two items that Pete Saxton had brought up last May, 2025, and it was an asset allocation study and an inception to date report to analyze the fund performance from inception to date. And I don't recall seeing any of those coming to fruition, and if there was any desire to try to get those going, or if we want to put them on the next agenda to discuss.
This is Keith. I was looking at the minutes for the August 18th meeting for a different reason and saw that PFM did discuss an asset allocation study. And I don't know what the outcome was of that, if we decided we would like to see that asset allocation study regularly presented by PFM or not. So take a look at what we talked about during the August 18th meeting. Jeff?
Yeah, we'll take a very similar approach this year. And we do it annually with many clients, some every 2 years. But basically, take your asset allocation, project out. So that's what we bring next quarter.
And then I'm not certain what Pete's idea for that inception to date reporting. It feels like we're getting inception to date information from.
Yes, I saw that on the PARS report.
From the PARS report and from, it is on PARS and it is on PFM's report. They generally give us inception to date information on there. You're free to research that, but I'm drawing a blank and uncertain what Pete's purpose was for requesting that.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that was satisfied, that it wasn't an open.
I'm not saying project. That is an open item, but I don't know what the other trustees feel about that.
Okay.
I feel like we're getting that information already. I'm not sure if that might have been referenced to a specific report that was in front of us that didn't have inception to date information or whatnot, but I don't recall that it's anything we're waiting for.
Okay.
Cool. Thanks, Anna.
Are there any other future agenda item suggestions or topics to be discussed when we meet? All right, I think that concludes agenda item G. The next agenda item is H. Before we start that, I would just like to thank everyone who participated. Wonderful meeting. Appreciated all of the information. At this point, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved, and great job,
Keith. Thank you, Bill. All right, so Bill moves to adjourn. Any seconds?
Second.
Angel moves to second that. Is there any discussion about adjournment? Let's do a roll call vote then. I'm assuming we have to do for that too.
Keith?
Aye.
Angel?
Aye.
Anna?
Aye.
And Bill?
Yeah.
All right.
All right, thanks. I believe that's 4-0, unanimous. The motion is approved to adjourn the meeting. We will see you all in 3 months. Thank you very much again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.